please enjoy this final section of the interview and future offerings from Enlightenment.com. I'd like to leave you with one last introductory comment. Here, Ken discusses the personal side of what it's like to be Ken Wilber. He also shares his views on such subjects as the internet, parapsychology, and even the use of psychedelics. Most importantly, Ken always reminds us of the need to find a personal practice and stick with it.
Well, that's a nice segue here for me to ask you just a few personal questions that I wanted to ask you. The first was, why you? Since we were talking about it, you know, comparisons to Hegel, the Einstein of consciousness, even if they're only half right, you know, how do you feel about the fact that, you know, you're the world's most influential and popular psycho-spiritual theorist? How does it feel to have so many people reading and absorbing your words? I mean, is it heady? Is it, I mean, do you just think of yourself kind of like as a normal guy with a dog that snores? Or are you, you know, I mean, is it hard not to get inflated?
Yeah. It's one of those things that I tend to think about it. It's like people that have kind of an overnight success. I mean, it's one thing if you're like a rock band and, you know, you're together for a week and then you have a hit single and then the next day you're on the cover of Time magazine or something. I mean, that must be very unbalancing. Mm-hmm. But most of the bands, I mean, like the Beatles or something, they were out there, you know, as people know, for like 10 years, day in and day out. And so I, you know, wrote my first book when I was 23. And I went through a period of, I think, kind of inflation and unbalance because you hear so many projections are put on you that you both demonic. You know, I'm much more demonic, you know, that some people would think that I am. And also, you know, it very positive projections put on you. And what tends to happen is that some way, sooner or later, you really have to address that. And I don't think I was particularly fast learn in that regard. But I had such a long time. I've had 30 years, basically. And so even somebody that's kind of slow like me on that area, I'm pretty okay with it after.
Or it wasn't like all of a sudden you had $50 million overnight. And
Exactly. And it wasn't like I just all of a sudden woke up one day and people started saying this out of the blue.
And you went through some heavy shit with Treya.
And it's heavy stuff with Treya, which was very, very, you know, it's radically 100% humbling. Because you just, death is the great leveler. I mean, you lose face, you lose everything, and you can't control it, and it will win. And you will, you know, find out a way to let go. And relate to that in a very direct, simple way, or you just get absolutely crushed by it. And I went, you know, semi-insane in 1985, what I call hell year, and I wrote about it very, I think, honestly, in Grace and Grit, the whole chapter in Tahoe. I mean, I just, it was horrifying.
That's the first book I give to someone if they want to give them to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they want to know you're real and you're human.
So mostly I don't, if you had some way that you could like tape record my inner dialogue,
right?
None of those words that you use would ever find me saying to myself. You would never find, he's the Hegel of this, or he's the great this, or he's the world's most influential. You would find none of that in my interior dialogue. That does not cross my...
You're just trying to do a good job at what you do.
And my dog snores.
And your dog does snore.
Yeah.
We have proof.
Right.
So, and how about the fame?
But it does do, the one thing I would say is the sort of, if there's a particular type of burden with it, the type of burden that I've always felt and that I think is extremely important to feel is a responsibility to present the truth as best you can. Mm-hmm. And that means based on as much evidence from as many different sources as you possibly can. And it's something that you want to be able to go back and read 10 or 15 or 20 years later and say, I still think that's pretty true. I feel that because a lot of people look to my work for ways it's going to really, they're going to incorporate it in their lives.
Absolutely.
And I want to make sure that I'm not going to disappoint them by leading them down a road for which there is simply no reason, no rhyme, or no evidence. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a kind of, if I feel sort of any, quote, burden, it's that. But I think that's a burden that everybody in this field should feel. I think it's sort of your, in the best sense of the word, a kind of internal conscience as a compass that makes you be responsible for what you write. So that part is, I feel that. And I think I should. It's very important.
So in a way, you are moving from pundit to teacher guru just a little bit, because you know...
Pandit's a teacher.
Okay.
Great pandits were... Nagarjuna was a pandit. Plotinus was a pandit. It's just, it's a little bit different in terms of what you're communicating and how you communicate it.
You know that people riot on your words. I mean, they eagerly, you know, read the latest Ken interview and then go, aha, and it changes them. I mean, right. It's a burden. It's an office. You're Ken Wilber. I know that seems weird for me to say to you, but, you know, hey, you're actually Ken Wilber. The fame thing, yeah. I know that you used to have problems with things like stalking. We can take this off the tape if you don't want me to talk about it.
It's okay. I still have it.
Does that still go on?
It's a real problem.
Women wanting to have your babies
men and women.
From...
Men and women. Different types. And and both positive and negative. The women are almost always positive. The men are sort of half and half. Half of the men that stalk me are very angry, and half are, I think I'm God, and we're having secret communications with each other. And usually what happens, and so they'll simply come from, you know, around the world, across the country, and just show up on the front porch, and they think that I'll know when they're here, and I can tell, I can just instantly feel them when they're around, because
yeah. I got a question from somebody who I won't say it was, and he wanted me to communicate it to you, and he was talking about how we're all elder brothers, and this was the opportunity for him finally, and I'm
right.
thinking,
oh, be careful, exactly. And the standard joke I make about it, there was the men basically, one way or another, do drive-by shootings. Right. It's a one-time thing. If they're mad at me, they leave the bomb threat,
right.
And then they get tired and they go away. Or if they think that there's some great communication, they'll try to get it across, and if I don't respond, they'll go away. And the reason is that men can't commit. Women, on the other hand, the little relationship lovers, stalk me for decades. and they're just always there. Most of them are very, very pleasant people, and we kind of have a standing. Some of them become very fond. You can't have any contact with any of them. But one of ours, I don't want to give too much information here, one leaves about 3 20-minute messages a day on an answering machine, and has been doing so for 17 years.
No.
So, never met any of these people. You can't have any response. But most of them are very sweet. It's very touching. But unfortunately, a lot of them is sort of like the David Letterman incident. And we have to call the police, and they have to come and get them. And they have to, you know, it's very, very unfortunate. It's very, very difficult. And what I really don't want to have to do is put up a fence around the house. But I really think I'm going to have to. It's just getting much worse.
So. Mm. Yeah, that'd be too bad.